short skirts and a long scripture,
where we discuss and create a space to heal from religious trauma.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to our podcast. It's been a while. Glad you're here again. I'm Cass.
I'm Hannah. Today we have a guest with us.
I'm Katie.
Welcome, hi, Katie.
We are really excited to hear your story. It's going to be a good time. Can you give us a little bit of your background with Christianity and the church, Katie?
Yeah, so I grew up in a Christian household. We turned Messianic, went the Messianic route when I was, 9 or 10. We did that for many years. We relocated from the Midwest out to Oregon, where we, I would say, trialed a lot of Messianic congregations. Not fantastic. And then ended up in a church that was pastored by one of the youth group leaders. And we did that until I left.
Okay, so you say your family turned Messianic. I'm actually really curious. Mm-hmm. Do you remember as a kid noticing any kind of a big difference between what you guys were before to becoming Messianic? And I'm assuming Messianic, you mean like Judaism Messianic.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the biggest difference was we went to church on Saturdays and I was no longer allowed to wear pants and I was very upset about it.
Oh no.
Messianic means no pants, okay.
Messianic means no pants, long skirts, and head coverings. Head coverings won.
Oh, yeah.
They tried for a while on me. And it,
I was going to say, I don't ever remember you wearing a head covering.
Ever. I could not.
I have a question about the whole Messianic. So you said you tried a bunch of Messianic churches, but you guys weren't, I guess, into that. And then you found the one that we all were a part of. So what was wrong with the other churches, I suppose? Like, what was going on there that your family was like, maybe no?
Very weird people. And that's coming from me. Very weird people. I would say, truly, 100%, there was one cult that we were in for a while.
And oh, dear.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Yeah.
So were anybody, they, like, Orthodox? Almost
Orthodox, but I would say like Orthodox wannabes.
Oh,
like, okay. There was a lot of overlap between Orthodox rules, laws, traditions, and what they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because I don't know much about it either, for our listeners and myself too, can you kind of explain to us what Messianic Judaism, I guess, is compared to, I guess, regular Christianity?
Messianic Judaism, the style that we observed was we believed that the Old Testament and the New Testament were both valid. So we followed all the Old Testament laws and the feasts and holidays and all of that jazz.
Okay, so basically it was observing all of the Old Testament Judaism while also believing the New Testament. That's really what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So like no pork, no shellfish, eating semi-kosher, but not like Jewish culture, kosher.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So what would you consider the group then? You just mentioned you were in potentially an actual cult at one point. So what would you consider the group that we were a part of, this like youth program with the churches involved and stuff?
I would call it I wrote down a note somewhere and I don't have it with me. But a very unhealthy fundamentalist group with some cult-like tendencies.
So could you maybe talk us through some of those, the unhealthy fundamentalist parts of the group that you noticed maybe later on in life after you got out or maybe while you were still in, and any of the cult-like tendencies that you noticed?
I think that a bunch of the unhealthy teachings, like you've already covered on the show, I mean, like the modesty culture, the Women are always silent, and there's one way to interpret this scripture that we're going to give you, kind of as the big ones, and just the clickiness of the group. Like, there were definitely in groups and out groups. I don't know if I would call that just an unhealthy atmosphere or cult-like behavior. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
I also remember the clickiness and how it was like, if you wanted to be in with the people, you had to have the appearance of being perfect Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was anything wrong with you or anything that they perceived as wrong with you, you didn't really get invited to do things. You weren't really allowed to have any kind of leadership or leader positions. So I definitely do remember that. That's definitely not healthy, regardless of whether it's cult-like or not.
Oh, yeah.
So, Katie, how did you guys, your family, I mean, get involved with the group, with the community? Like, what drew you in, maybe? Like, how did you get involved?
It had to have been, we went to one of the churches where the leadership was part of the youth group. And I'm assuming we were invited from there. I don't remember exactly how or when we started, but I remember my brothers and I started going. I don't know, I was maybe 13, 14, somewhere around there.
Okay, yeah. Do you know what kept you going? Did you just enjoy being with other youths?
No. No. It was just it was just the thing that we did on, what was it, Tuesday nights?
Wednesday.
I don't remember.
It was a Wednesday.
Wednesday nights was youth group, and it was when we relocated from Colorado to Oregon, we moved in between these two little tiny towns, so like we had zero social life, so that was our only really social life besides going to Costco for groceries. So you wanted to leave the house, you went to youth group.
Yeah, I guess you guys were maybe one of those homeschool families that really didn't leave the house for much, huh?
Yeah, well, and it was just like we lived miles from any town, and there wasn't not very much of a community around there.
Yeah, I remember your guys' house was pretty out there. I have a little backstory with Cassie. I remember the first time I met Katie and her family.
Oh my gosh, do tell. Do tell.
So I met the brothers first. Of them.
Oh,
all
I'm so
at
sorry.
The same time for some godforsaken reason. Because, and I don't know how we found out about this group either. My dad started taking my brother to Alert Cadets.
That's right.
Yes. Oh, and buddy. We met your family, and my dad was like, oh, these are a lot of nice young boys and blah, blah, blah. And for, I don't think they did it for very long, but I remember we went for their, remember the little soapbox racing things like for Awanas or whatever?
Yeah.
So we went for that thing, and they were all there because I remember, cut that out, with his Coke bottle glasses on. So that's when I met your family for the first time. So that's fun.
This has been story time with Cassie.
I don't remember when I met you, Cassie, but I distinctly remember one of the first times must have been your dad shot a bison, and we were at your house helping you guys process the bison.
That's right, because I was like, man, I really like that knife you're using to butcher this animal. Can I get the name of it? And Cameron got it for me for Christmas the next year.
Did I bring my own knife? I don't have that anymore. One of my younger brothers stole it. It was my favorite knife.
I have the same one now, and it is my favorite one for butcher season. Weird shit. Anyway.
Well, as you know, most of the years that we were part of this youth group have been erased from my memory. Like, it's very hard for me to actually remember anything that happened. The only thing that I could tell you I remember from Katie's family is that, man, they had a lot of boys.
So many boys.
And I remember Katie being one of the only young ladies that didn't seem fake when you met them. Like, we've talked about this before on the podcast. If you want to be in with the people, you have to act like they want you to act, right? Mm-hmm. Katie would just show up and just be like, "What's up, humans? Let's go." And I just remember appreciating that about you.
That's so good to hear, because I was just an awkward, I didn't know how to mask or act like they wanted me to, and now I don't care.
That's good.
Yeah.
That helped you in the long run, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Not having to kind of shed that weird facade or whatever. You just got to raw dog it all the way along.
Right. Okay, so now I'm curious, why, like, how old were you and why did you decide to leave? Like, was it this a whole family thing, or was it just you? Like, how did you do that?
No, I remember leaving just kind of, I aged out of it a little bit and I turned 18, 19, and I got a job, and I just didn't have time, and I was driving my own car and did not want to spend the gas money. And then mm-hmm. I started volunteer firefighting when I was like 19, and I moved in as a resident volunteer. And so that was,
what a boss. I think that was
the mm-hmm. end of it, because I had other things to do. I was busy. Yeah.
I remember going on an outreach program, the one we used to go do in California, and talking to you about all the stuff that you had been doing since mm-hmm. kind of leaving the group and everything, and, you know, actually living in the real world, and thinking that, wow, it's possible. She did it. Like, oh. We have hope.
You just have to find that group of people that's weird, just like you, and like all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's like, oh, my life makes sense now.
Yeah.
Okay, that I'm weird.
Exactly.
Weirdness wasn't appreciated as much as I think it should have been in that group.
Oh, no. It was ignored.
I agree.
They're like, if we ignore it, it'll go away.
It did. Yeah, it's true. Eventually.
We all left.
Yeah.
Look at us now.
All the weirdness is gone because we're gone.
Okay, Katie, so in our notes I'm looking at, it seems like you had some specific points that maybe you wanted to discuss about things that you had to unlearn or relearn, unpacking, deconstructing, whatever you want to call it. We have lots of different names. Maybe pertaining to some of the, like, biases, the gender biases that were in the group that maybe specifically you struggled with.
Yeah, those are like the first ones that came to mind, and ones that I struggled with the most, I think, were that, you know, if you grew up as a female in that conservative Christian youth group, you were taught that you were supposed to sit in the background, be quiet, let the men lead, and your opinion really was not worth the same as what a man would say. And that's one that has taken years to shed, kind of, or deconstruct and kind of get out of, because that just makes ruts in your mind and you have to alter the way that you think. Working in, like, I started volunteer firefighting when I was like 19, and that helped so much, because there were a couple of really strong female volunteers that took me under the wing and were like kind of the backbone of that place. It was not your typical all male and the one token female fire department. Mm-hmm. And I learned a ton from that and from those ladies. But I think I'm going on like 12, 13, 14 years in that industry. And
wow,
I am way more type A than I thought I was growing up. I am not shocked that I was growing up. I state my opinion. I'm very good at my job, and I'm very often in positions of leadership and have to boss grown men around, and it's fine. It's taken a long time, and I still struggle with it a little bit, of that, you know, trusted myself that like my opinion, my idea, my tactics for this certain problem are just as smart or valid as the guy standing next to me.
Right.
So it's a work in progress, but like.
Yeah, good for you.
But it's always going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, I think so. But little 16-year-old me would be like, who is this lady?
She's crushing it.
Independence in us was suppressed.
Yes, yes.
Our opinionated selves.
Okay, yeah. Speaking of suppression, you had some thoughts about the modesty and the purity culture. Do you want to go into that?
Oh, the modesty culture? Can I just say I fucking hate it?
Amen.
Fair.
But yeah, like growing up as a, I don't remember who it was on the podcast, but like as somebody who grew up being a little bit more curvy.
Right.
And then being told like, can't show anything.
Yeah.
So I dressed in potato sacks for years.
Yeah.
And it took a long, long time before I was okay with just normal fitting clothes and not caring about what other people thought. And there's still like, I'm not going to be the one rocking the booty shorts and a crop top ever.
We'll no, see. Should be. No.
Anybody
voluptuous has... woman.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. Edit out all of my blah, blah, blahs, but.
Never. Go on, go on. Okay, modesty. No, thank you.
Being responsible for our quote-unquote brothers in Christ's thoughts. And
oh, yeah, that was just a big deal.
That's a lot of pressure to put on young girls.
Yeah, yeah, and especially when, like, I can't help the way that my body is growing.
Yes! Thank you. Say it louder for the people in the back.
Sorry, I've got boobs, and no matter how frumpy I dress, you're probably going to see it, and oh my goodness, I'm so sorry.
Okay. Purity culture?
Purity culture.
Sidebar Hannah here. You're about to hear something that happened because of an innuendo. Just brace yourself. And we decided to leave it in because it really just fits the vibes of our guest and how much fun we had in this conversation.
No, but like the purity culture...
Deconstructed homeschoolers are kinky.
Oh. We all had that Boy Scouts book of knots.
Oh, no, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Lots of time on our hands and creativity. And what is macrame, but...
What is macrame?
Go on.
Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, just like growing up in that purity culture where like you are...
You killed Cassie. Okay. We're going to take a brief moment for Cassie to pass away. Sorry.
That was so fucking funny. What is macrame? But just, oh my God, I'm writing that down. Oh my God. How do you
Why
spell
is macrame,
macrame
important, you ask?
I have no idea.
Why is macrame important, you might ask? Because macrame is one of the acceptable hobbies for young women to have because it is an industrious, quote-unquote, activity.
Industrious. Well, I'm very good at industrious activities.
Yeah, girl.
Oh, my God. That was funny.
You're welcome. And now, back to the show.
Katie had a comment on purity culture.
Growing up ashamed of your body's like natural desires, and you're a horny teenager, and just the immense amount of shame that I felt just being a teenager and experiencing those hormonal shifts and those desires, and seeing that all through the lens of, oh no, like I'm weak, I'm sinning, this is bad, this is wrong, was horribly unhealthy. And I think really stunted me for quite a lot of years. I was in my mid-20s before I ever dated anybody. It's I just didn't know how to talk with guys in like a professional or friendly manner. I was clueless and still, you know, very ashamed. Like, oh, if I get into a relationship with somebody and, oh, if it doesn't work out, then that's bad and sinful and just unhealthy beliefs. And it took quite a bit to get out of that. And now I'm happy and healthy and all the things, because
good.
Moving past that.
Nice. I love to hear that.
Yeah. So how would you say moving out of the some of the damaging things that you remember being taught and that unfortunately kind of stuck with you for a long time, how would you say your spiritual journey is now? Kind of where are you at with that?
Right now, I consider myself agnostic / atheist. There was leaving the group. There was about a 5-year period that was kind of an unintentional deconstruction, just distancing myself from the group and being exposed to different mindsets and beliefs and really finding acceptance within the non-religious community. And I mean, my experience with non-Christians, and I know this is a general, me generalizing a lot, but they're so much more accepting and friendly and honestly good people, so much more than especially that group that I came out of. Like, still that group was like so judgmental and so clicky, and you had to be perfect, and if your beliefs didn't line up with theirs, then you were shunned. And I think that had quite a bit to do with that deconstruction phase. But yeah, kind of a 5-year deconstruction phase, and then just kind of got to the point where it was like, I think like the last thing to do was like verbalize to myself that I don't think I believe this anymore. And the amount of shame that like left my system when I did that was incredible. And it was a beautiful moment. And yeah, haven't looked back since.
I'm glad you're doing so well. I mean, the amount of stuff that we all went through as this group, the amount of stuff that you went through coming from where your family came from, the way that you were able to like kind of inch away from all of the harmful stuff that we were taught. And I know it took a long time and it took like quite a few years to unlearn things, but look at you now.
I still have issues, but no, honestly, like,
that's what therapy is for.
That's what therapy is for. So good. Like, it was so good getting out of it. And
all the things that we had to learn how to do that most people learned in like middle school that we had to learn how to do as adults is unreal.
Yeah.
I remember getting out of the group and then moving 400 miles away from all of that. And I mean, which was great too, because I really got to like literally start over. No one knew me. I didn't have to worry about like the judgment or the, what are you doing? You weren't raised like this, blah, blah, blah. I know your parents kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice in that regard to be able to kind of recreate myself and also be able to learn all of these things without people, you know, feeling like they're whispering behind my back or pointing fingers at me, or, you know, are they going to call the pastor or whatever? That still happened, but whatever. All that stuff. So
yeah,
all that stuff that we had to relearn, though, painful sometimes.
Very, yeah, like learning how to, I did not know how to talk to men for the longest time, and then what do I decide to do? I decided to go get a job with 90% men.
Yeah.
But like, once I figured it out, I was like, oh, I got this, and like,
actually, this is not that bad.
this is actually great, and 90% of my friends are men now, and
yeah.
Imagine.
that's allowed?
No.
Also, the fact that we were able to make friends with people that weren't, like, of the same exact mindset as we were, and they were, like, good people.
Yeah.
When we were told they're the enemy because we have to convert them or something, whatever.
Yeah, and they are literally the nicest people you will ever meet.
Do you have any thoughts about, or did you want to talk about your mental health journey coming from this group? Because that's been very interesting to hear people's perspectives when we ask them, how's your mental health doing? Are you good?
So much better now. While like in that group, like I know now, probably definitely social anxiety and depression. Feeling, you just feel alone in a group of 60 people.
Yeah.
You don't fit in perfectly. And that was a rough couple of years. And definitely therapy and getting out of there helped with that so much. And finding a group of people that was, finding a group of people who's actually accepting, because I don't know about a lot of people, but I was an awkward teenager. I was an awkward teenager growing up, and my family had these different beliefs. And I know that my mom was not well liked in the group because she was outspoken about some of the stuff. And so she was shunned, and therefore think that didn't help me a lot. Mm-hmm. Just so much going into that group and feeling like, oh, am I the broken one because nobody wants to talk to me
or
hang out with me or be friends was a lot for 16-year-old.
Yeah.
16-year-old brain.
That really is. I know my mom kind of brought up the same kind of, what do you call it, similarity, comparison of some of the stuff that we went through was, and I'm going to paraphrase, it's like the religious version of the cliques and the bullying and the shit that happens in high school, but with a religious aspect thrown on top of it. So and I don't know if that maybe was worse than if we would have been like regular high schoolers, generic, whatever, or not, but that kind of helped me put it into perspective of it's normal. Was it shit? Absolutely. Did we have religion thrown in it that made it worse? Yes, we did. So getting out of the group, I know Hannah and I have talked about this quite a bit of how difficult it was for us to set up like our boundaries, what they were, because we weren't allowed to make boundaries. So we were like, we got, tossed into the world after getting out of this group, and we're like, we don't know what to do anymore. In terms of like dating, in terms of, how we expect people to treat us or talk to us or anything like that. Did you have any points on that?
Well, I just didn't date for 10 years after getting out of the group. So
yeah, just like nothing, just none of it, none at all.
If you're oblivious to everything, then it's then it works.
right,
it works.
Yeah. Dating, setting boundaries. I definitely had issues setting boundaries with like how people would treat me or saying yes to a lot of things, whether it was just work stuff and just, I don't know. I got out of the group and, graduated high school, and I started working just ungodly hours and volunteering and whatnot. So I really didn't have a life outside of work for a really long time. So didn't date, but there were definitely in a couple jobs, like weird coworkers that were really shitty, like shitty guys that I worked with that would say things or make comments that, looking back, it's like, oh, that was really fucked up.
Oh,
should not have let them say that or treat me that way. But,
you didn't know any better because we weren't taught that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least for me, most of the boundaries that I've had to deal with is relationships with people, whether it be like friends or family or community that I'm a part of, and learning, okay, these people are really bad for my mental health, but I still want them in my life. So like, how do I navigate that? So that has been fun for my boundary journey, and just trying to continually interact with people that maybe aren't the most healthy relationships for me, but like, I still want connection at some level. Like, I don't know. Boundaries are hard, guys.
They are.
Boundaries are hard, even if you've been, you know, working on them for a while. I know that I had to fix my boundaries on what I would allow myself to go do, because I remember when I was in the group, I was trying so hard to be involved in everything so people would like me, that after I got out, I felt like I had to be involved in everything again. And I did that for a little bit, and then I decided I'm a recluse at heart and I don't need to do that anymore. And once I decided that and figured that out, I was a much happier person.
Yeah, that people pleasing and saying yes to everything is definitely, it's still a struggle sometimes, because I do, like, somebody wants me to do something to work, yeah, I'll say yes, or take on this responsibility, or yeah, I really want to say yes to so many things, but definitely getting better at saying no, and that's helped me so much.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of you guys, because I have a really hard time saying yes to literally anything. My default is no, and I'm personally working on this.
Mine too.
Like, should I be helping that field because I know how to do it? Yes, I should. Do I want to? No. So I have to convince myself, is it like the right enough thing to do to like participate in this, or am I drawing the line?
Honestly, the main thing I wanted to cover was just like the clickiness of that group and like the shittiness that was, and having a little bit of space for that, because that sucked. I don't think I have any other points to make, but I could tell you guys, and this probably should not be on the podcast, but I could tell you the story of how everybody from that community stopped talking to me.
Definitely need to share that after we're done. Yeah.
Do you want to share that like right now without using names? Because I will totally keep it in.
That might be an important story for other people to hear.
You know what? It could. If you decide if you want to keep it in, I will not name any names. Okay. When my oldest brother was engaged in getting married, his soon-to-be bride had a bachelorette party. And so there had been some smack talk between my brother and I and her, and like he said something about like, oh, you can't embarrass me, and something like that. So I decided that the perfect gift for my soon-to-be sister-in-law was a big old strap-on. And so as we're having this bridal shower, bachelorette party, whatever, Christian community, tons of people from that group, you know, going around, she's opening each gift, oh, thanks, you know, whatever. And then mine comes up and...
Oh, Katie.
Did they even know what it was?
Oh, Katie.
She loved it. She loved it. But so she opens it, like she doesn't like wave it out in the air because there's kids.
Right.
But she's like, this is an amazing present. Thank you so much. And they put it off to the side.
Hilarious. Anywho, right.
All of the moms then, like everybody had to go see what it was afterwards. And then all of the moms just like cycled through and like peeking in the bag and, oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. It's so big.
Wait. So you got your sister-in-law to me a strap-on. The moms panicked.
Everybody, all the moms, everybody like had to go look and see what it was. And I have never been talked to by anybody in that group again, even like after going to several events and like stuff. That's
wow. That was so simple. That's all I needed to
do. That's all you gotta do. You gotta just show up with a strap on.
That was it.
In your purse.
Just like rummage around. There's my keys.
That is a beautiful story right there. Mm, beautiful. Yes.
Thank you for sharing that.
Beautiful moment in my life.
Couple last questions that I did have. Katie, where are you at now in regards to your faith journey, I'll say?
Faith journey, like I said, I'm happily agnostic / atheist. I think that if I do change that belief, I think I would lean more kind of the spiritualist route, but mm-hmm. I guess it just doesn't hold any weight for me anymore. I think you can be a good person without a book telling you to be.
Yeah.
You should be a good person without Always. Anyone telling you to be. Let's just be clear. You should be. Thank you for your openness in your stories. We appreciate you.
Any filter that I did have left in my adult life left during like 2020, 2021. I have no filter anymore.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, anything you want to tell the people?
I don't know. Just do it. Just get out there and do it. Follow your heart, your dreams. I don't know. Just never pat a running dog.
Never what a running dog?
Never pat a burning dog.
Oh, yes, never do that. That sounds dangerous and flammable for both involved.
As a host on one of my favorite podcasts says, cut your bangs, text your crush. You'll be fine. You don't have to, but I'm just throwing this out there if you wanted to give a soundbite. Do you have anything you want to plug or like invite listeners to interact with you or anything?
I'm dead on social media.
Perfect. That's all we need.
Not really.
Sounds great.
That's all right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Katie, for talking with us today. We appreciate you
so much. Thank you so much for sharing with us with your non-filter, your rawness and your stories sharing with us today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, reach out to us on our website, shortskirtslongscripture.com, Instagram, Skirts and Scripture. Send us an email. We would love to hear your stories, or if you just want to send us an email and talk to us, skirtsandscripture@gmail.com.
The repression made me kinky as fuck.